Noon. Again, thank you so much for staying. I've never presented at the last session on the last day at the very last person, so this is new for me. I'm going to be talking, and actually it's fortuitous, I guess, but I'm really going to be feeding off a lot of what you have talked about in your discussion lends itself into my discussion. I'm going to be presenting on evaluating the impact of the Survive and Thrive program. I used a multiple stakeholder evaluation process, and I just, as the speakers before me have said, I wanted to acknowledge my colleagues that worked with me, whose without their help I couldn't have put this project together. I'm going to briefly be describing the background of the Survive and Thrive program, and then go into the steps that I followed in creating that multiple stakeholder evaluation process, and then discuss a little bit the implications in terms of assessing impact of leadership and executive development programs, particularly those that are offered nationwide. Okay, so what is the Survive and Thrive program? Well, the Survive and Thrive program comes at a time when NACHO, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, were looking at the research and realized that approximately 30% of the local health officials were new to their position, meaning 2 years or less. And that was occurring at the same time when, as we just heard, many folks are leaving those leadership positions as the public health workforce ages. And so what NACHO and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation recognized was a need for action-oriented programs targeted at these new local health officials, and hence Survive and Thrive came about. Survive and Thrive training is really preparing these new local health officials with the necessary knowledges and skills. They have 5 competencies that they've derived in their competency set, with not only to survive that first few years, but also really thrive in them, to succeed and excel. The target audience, as I said, are new local health officials, and that is folks that have been in the department 2 years or less, hence new. Okay, what is the training program format? Well, there's several components within Survive and Thrive. It's approximately 100 hours over a 12-month period. It's a year-long program. They have pre-workshop assessments that they are to complete before they come to that first workshop, that first time where they all meet as a group. And that is, they take an emergenetics profile, and they take a decision-making style profile. And they're also sent their books. They do some pre-workshop reading. And then they meet in person for the first workshop. They just conducted their first one. 6 months later, they have a second workshop, and then they have another workshop right before graduation. During the first workshop, they are developing their individual learning plan, and that is, they put together a learning contract of 10 tasks that the fellows are going to complete over that year-long process. In completing these tasks, they call not only on their own resources, but also the cohort that they have, that there's 30 fellows in each cohort, but they have group conference calls where they can use each other as resources. They're also, during that first workshop, one of the unique components of Survive and Thrive was they were not only matched with a coach, they were able to choose their own coach. And the coaches are really interesting because who they've chosen to use as coaches in Survive and Thrive are seasoned local health officials. So you're getting that transfer of knowledge of folks that have been in the local health departments for quite a bit of time that are then matched up with these new local health officials. Which is an important component, and it's also, in some ways, the coaching component is almost like a misnomer because they're really playing the role of mentor along with coaching. And as I said, there's 30 fellows in this first cohort, and it's a nationwide program. They're scattered across the country. So I was brought in. I responded to an RFP as an evaluation consultant to come in and create a useful and a cost-effective evaluation plan that could be used in a nationwide program. They wanted something that was standardized because we're talking about looking at impact across the nation, so something that they could make some rough-cut comparisons of how well they were doing, irrespective of which local health department they were working in, but also something that, you know, this program's brand new and they needed an evaluation plan that was responsive enough as when they had to make changes, the evaluation plan could kind of roll with it and change to reflect the changes that were being made in the training design. And again, as I said, the evaluation plan is going to be used throughout the program to evaluate program components throughout years 2 through 4. So the major questions they wanted me to address, and we've modified these as we've gone along and created the program, but essentially, is the curriculum achieving the stated goals? That is, are they achieving those competency sets that they put forward? Are the delivery modalities being used for the curriculum most appropriate? They not only do the in-person workshops, they also just conducted a distance learning training module. So they're using different delivery modalities, and we want to make sure that as we create this program, that each of those modalities is being used in a way that's most appropriate. Then is the mentoring coaching component of the program working as expected? We know that's a vital component for learning transfer, so we identified that as a major evaluation question. And then are the fellows actually using the knowledge, skills, and abilities targeted in the curriculum? And what they were getting at here was really that impact component. Not only are they getting those during the workshop, but then are they transferring that knowledge back in their workplace as they work through those learning contracts, that they're improving their performance in their local health department and the performance of the local health department? And then what are some recommendations for continuous quality improvement? This is a rollout year so that we know there'll be some modifications as the training program gets set forward. And they wanted an evaluation plan that was responsive, that I could be giving them continuous feedback so that they can incorporate that. And we actually just did that. We used the results of Workshop 1 to modify some of the components of Workshop 2 that's coming up in February. So what process should we use to meet these goals? When I came in, I had some things, and looking at the training that they were wanting to deliver, and from my knowledge as an evaluator, I said, you know, there's certain things that we need to have as a framework. And one is we need to have an integrated mixed methods assessment. And essentially what I was trying to tell them, that we wanted not only quantitative data, particularly with demonstrating impact, but also qualitative data. And what I was trying to get at here was the numbers are important, but also the why behind those numbers are important, particularly when you're trying to make continuous quality improvements to the system. The other thing that I recognized early on was we needed a multi-source system. They rely heavily on, when we're looking at performance, a 360-degree feedback system. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with that. Okay, good. But in leadership programs, part of the what they're gaining through the program is self-awareness. And a great way to convey that is to have them not only rate their own behaviors in their local health department, but also all the major constituents within that health department rate their behavior as well. So you have their supervisors rating them, their subordinates rating them, their peers rating them, their partners rating them, so that you get that real full 360-degree feedback for them on how well they're doing, and then they can make comparisons of how they see themselves and how others see them. In order to do that, we needed to have repeated measures where we collected data right when they started the training. We're collecting it in graduating from the training program in a year, excuse me, and then importantly, 3 to 6 months following training so that we can really look at maintenance and generalization of those transfer behaviors. And then finally, when you're looking at performance on the job, you have to recognize that beyond what you've learned in a training session, there are contextual factors that are either going to facilitate or impede your performance of those behaviors back on the job. So I said, if we're going to have a 360 feedback system, we're also going to have some kind of measure of contextual variables that may be impacting that training above and beyond the training effectiveness itself. So when should we start developing the evaluation system? I really have to applaud NACHO and RWJ that it wasn't, they had the training program designed and then they brought me in. While they were in the initial phases of that program design for the Survive and Thrive, they brought me to the table. And I was able to create my evaluation plan in parallel to their program design before the program was initiated this past July. What that allows me to do is come to the table, get a better understanding of what the practice partners want, what they really see as the outcome, but it also allows them to have a better understanding of what the evaluation can do. So in the feedback meetings, they were able to decide on changes that they might want to make the curriculum and then talk to me about how that might impact the evaluation answers to the evaluation questions that they were really interested in. And it allowed for me to be very responsive, and it allowed a give and take that the evaluation plan could be standardized yet flexible to meet everyone's needs. So who should participate in the evaluation process? Well, in this case, and in the case when I work with these kinds of programs, I really emphasize as much as you can being collaborative in the evaluation process, where the key stakeholders all were able to provide input. They have an advisory work group that includes local health officers and representatives from the Board of Health. We had representatives from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the NACHO program. NACHO project staff was there with me, as well as the curriculum designers. And what I was allowed to do was come in and be a part of their monthly advisory meetings, their face-to-face review meetings. They gave me a half a day in one of their review meetings where I presented the evaluation plan and was able to get feedback from them on all the specific evaluation measures and methodology. I also have weekly conference calls, not only when we were putting the evaluation together, but even now that it's ongoing, where that we are able to keep each other abreast of any changes or anything that's going on a weekly basis. And then finally, I also was able to provide a final review with NACHO and with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Once we had the plan in place and we thought this is what we're going to do, we had a final closeout meeting with them so that everybody was on the same page before the program started. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. What steps should be followed? Well, as I said, I really err on the side of getting as much input as I can from the major stakeholders. I look at it as evaluation as a collaborative process because I think everyone should have a voice in the system. But in order to do that, you really need to rely heavily on your logic model. And the logic model will sort of guide you in terms of developing your evaluation method and design. But you have to look at it as a collaborative process when you're using stakeholders' input is very iterative. That they're going to give you feedback, you need to really think about it, incorporate that back in, and then present it again to them, any changes that you might want to make. The other thing nice about having stakeholders' input is you can use, once you get the evaluation plan in place, you can pilot test it to sort of almost do an evaluability assessment to make sure that the measures are working and the methodology is working as you intended before you're actually on the ground gathering the measures. And again, once I got this pilot testing information, I was able to go back in and modify the logic model and the evaluation measures and methodology as needed. Okay. The wonderful thing about having a multiple stakeholder process is you get a lot of information and you get a lot of people's, everybody comes to the table with a different lens and you get a lot of great input. The negative thing about it is you get a lot of information, so you have a lot to integrate, and you have to reach consensus on who should be evaluated, what should be evaluated, how should they be evaluated, when should they be evaluated. So my recommendation is start with a logic model. It gives you that visual depiction. We use an outcome approach, but it gives you that visible depiction of what it's going to look like in terms of your resources, your activities, your outputs that you expect, your outcomes. It really helps clarify the intended results and how you're going to achieve the intended results. So it helps outline the approach and expectations behind the program and the expected outcomes. What you can then do is use that once you let them see the actual logic model. I really advise giving structured questions to take folks stepwise through the model. You know, are any elements missing? You know, and then you can start talking, that leads to a natural progression toward the evaluation process of, okay, given this logic model, how will we measure success? How will these results lead to continuous improvement? So in that capacity, then you move into the evaluation, developing the plan itself, where you can say, I'm the evaluation expert, but you're the subject matter expert. And you can take them through the major steps where you can ask them, are the measures relevant? Are they clear? Are they comprehensive? And the group that I was working with, one of the things they wanted me to be very sensitive to, because I was getting information from so many different sources, was how long is it going to be to complete these surveys? Because as public health folks, we get surveyed all the time, and your response rate isn't going to be what you want it to be if you don't have the surveys have them be able to complete them in a short period of time. So we tried to be very cognizant of that, and we had them review it with that in mind. Another thing they were helpful to me was in terms of continuous quality improvement, the evaluation process, they said, make sure since we're going to use these results as we move forward, make sure that we get these results during the first program year. So I was able to give them feedback right after workshop one that they were able to then utilize and modify workshop two. And this was a really good suggestion from the work group. They said, gosh, there's so much information. Can you put it in some kind of schema where we can see what our evaluation question was, and then we can look at these measures, and they're abbreviated, but we can look at, you know, what the measure is, who is giving it, when they're being surveyed, and what question it addresses. And it was a great exercise for me and for them to see how everything fell out once we had agreed upon what the evaluation plan was essentially going to look like. This takes, and I'm only giving you 6 months there because that was all the fit on the slide, but we had it through the first 18-month period, and it really was a great exercise for me and for them. How do we know it'll work as planned? Well, one of the things we decided was we, particularly given those time issues, that we wanted to pilot test on a relevant sample. So we got 25 individuals from the Board of Health and 25 LHOs, and we administered the survey online using SurveyMonkey that you just mentioned. We wanted to make sure that there was going to be no problems getting to the length, how long the surveys were going to take, and then also issues, small issues like the directions you're giving them. I wanted feedback on every aspect of that before we actually put those surveys online and put them in their final form for the cohort. Okay, an example of this process soup to nuts was the way we did the 360-degree performance measure. The literature recommends it, and certainly you all seem to recognize that, for leadership and executive development programs, this type of survey is very important. And it was also recommended by the major stakeholders, particularly by the curriculum designers. But the problem was which performance measure to use. If you look at 360-degree performance measures for leadership and executive development, they tend to be quite lengthy, and the ones that are on hand tend to be quite expensive. So we were then wrestling with, well, which one to use? And because I'm an industrial organizational psychologist and I have a background in designing performance surveys, I said, you know what, why don't we tailor one that really fits what our competencies are for Survive and Thrive? So using program documentation from the initial planning meetings, early on the project lead had said, if you go through this program, what do you expect a successful LHO to demonstrate on the job? And they've listed categories and listed behaviors. I was able to take that, translate that into an instrument, and use the work group to help me refine it, and then pilot test it on the local health officials and the Board of Health. Then based on the pilot test, then modify the survey and the items and obtain that time amount required for instructions. And we've had the first administration of the 360 survey, and I'm getting in results, and knock on wood, it's been a success story thus far. And that was really all because of using those multiple stakeholders as a part of the process. I could not have done that without them. So what are my considerations? Well, the take-home message I would like you to have from this talk is to start the evaluation as early as possible, not when the program's designed, but when you're actually in the designing phase. And a logic model will go a long way to help guide the effort of the evaluation to clarify the purpose and major goals, and the outcomes and results can be delineated through that logic model. It'll include the perspective of all major stakeholders, but be aware, when we get their input, we try very hard to get the information to them at least a week ahead of time for them to review before we have the committee meetings. But the committee meetings are very structured, and then we have the set of questions that we're going to use to review with them given to them as well, so that everybody's on the same page. If you're going to do this type of comprehensive evaluation system, you are going to be using multiple measures and methods. And as such, you really should pilot test to examine the feasibility of the design and methods prior to the actual implementation. And essentially now they're calling that evaluability assessments, and most of the major funders are now requiring that you do these evaluability assessments. Interestingly, right after I put the final report together for NACHO and RWJ, a book was published, and it had, you know, strategically developing evaluation systems for leadership programs, and it gave the major steps that you needed to do. And I just put that up here because we had a nice overlap between what we had recommended with our evaluation process and what they were actually saying from the practice literature of what you should do. And so I have those up there for you as well. And I also want to let you know I didn't spend a lot of time talking about Survive and Thrive, and it is a terrific program. So I wanted to include their website and also have some brochures for you if you'd like to get more information from them. Thanks.
Did you put up your website again, please?
Oh, sure.
There's a shortcut to the website.
I know, I'm sorry.
Forward slash Survive and Thrive. Yeah, I was just sort of looking at it.
I'm sorry. I pulled
it
up. At this point, are there any questions?
easier for some people than for others. So we ended up coming up with a list of, I think, 15 job categories to describe what people might be doing in health departments. Some of them were very clear: public health nurse, epidemiologist. The consultant, it was actually, I shortened that title, it was actually public health consultant specialist, or I can't recall the third piece, but there were three components to that. And it was really a catch-all category of how people describe what they do. And really, it was almost an other classification system. So they were people who had responsibilities that were clearly with public health, but they were not trained as nurses or epidemiologists or administrators, but had other maybe programmatic, usually they were programmatic people who were running programs, project manager, etc.
Is this present by contrast, not the proton system?
I'm sorry?
Is this this thought is by contrast, not the...
Some of them were, in fact, contractors. Some of them were public health specialists, and that happened to be their job category, as they described it, but they were civil servants. So some were contractors, some were not. They tended to be program managers and program specialists within the health department.
Can I have a second question? I'm interested. How about the Department of Health to try that to, to use your research outcomes? Because you have a survey.
In terms of competencies?
I just want to question the next step, how to apply your research outcome to the Department of Health.
Well, one of the things we developed a full report that's about 40 pages long that we submitted to the Department of Community Health that they have used. We also, in the Office of Public Health Practice at the University of Michigan, have two federally funded training centers, the Michigan Public Health Training Center and also the Michigan Center for Public Health Preparedness. And both of those training centers actually use the results from this study to inform what courses they should be developing and offering as they go forward to train health department and community organization staff. We also have curriculum committees composed of people in state and local health departments and community organizations, which additionally advise how to fulfill the broad category, for example, of leadership skills. So we put a lot of effort into the topic and then develop courses based on that.
So the same question is that the first did the Department of Health give the budget for the local staff to participate in your program in university?
Our study was funded by the training centers, actually. The Center for Public Health Preparedness at the University of Michigan funded this particular study because we needed to inform the courses that we were developing. But funding is always an issue.
Our Department of Health Bureau of Training also has the same question. Who provides the funds?
Right.
Our program was actually also funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. The Foundation
conceivably could stay there for many years doing the same job. But if these employees, through a program like yours, get some advanced degree and have more job mobility, there seems to be the likelihood that they might move on to other locations or brain drain. So has your employer figured out that it might not be in their best interest to have their employees get this degree?
I think in this case, and maybe this is specific to the reservation, and that is that most of the employees want to be there, and they want to stay where they are, and they don't want to leave the reservation. They have family ties and cultural root in the area. And so, you know, while that might be a consideration in other places, the other thing is we don't take them out of there, and we don't take them out of their jobs, or we try not to. We try and keep them mostly in their jobs because the employers don't want them out in training. They don't want them going to training, even if it's on the job. They want them working. And so that's what we try and do. We try and keep them working and keep them where they are so they don't realize that there's other things.
My question is for Jolynn. You talked earlier about some association with continuity operations, but it seemed like your whole presentation was more about succession planning. I really saw a lot of tie to developing a workforce. You know, in your survey, you know, the questions are all geared toward long-term development of a workforce, but not toward filling those positions if somebody is a disaster. Did I miss something? Or because my definition of continuity operations is that piece.
Perhaps I misused it in that term. My thinking of continuity of operations was a little more broad and continuing operations as the workforce retires. So it wasn't really an emergency focus. That was just my misuse of a term. My apologies.
Okay.
During that 1 year, they're going to get the skill set almost like an orientation. Actually, shall I?
I'm the program manager for the project, and this is just the pilot year for this first group, and we're determining whether or not it works. and it's actually an 18-month program between having the fellows go through the program and evaluate it, and then we're going to create kind of a toolkit. Then we're going to test it. Hopefully, the plan that we haven't gotten funding for, but the plan is to then test that model in regions to see if it's a leadership institute or other training centers can take the package and be able to provide the training in a localized or a regional setting. And then once we sort of test that, our plan is we'll have a business plan to figure out how to keep this going in a sustainable fashion, ongoing. We're only guaranteed funding through November of next year with a strong support for another 18 months after that, but then it's not guaranteed after that. So, but we will have a business plan in place to figure out how to have this as an ongoing program, because to develop the program and then just take it away is a waste of resources for everyone. So that's the grand plan.
And you just mentioned you had a coach mentor. Yeah. And I think it is special. And I didn't know if you are student or you are so many, and how do you coach him?
You have to be
to them were assigned with a small group. So they meet with them together as a group, and then they also meet with them individually. For example, we're just finishing the first wave of the 360 feedback. They meet initially as a group, and then the coach has a one-on-one session with them to deliver individual feedback. And so they get some time individual with them and then some time with them as a group.
Okay, you have to keep those teams small, because anything large,
right,
is about five people, and it's too much for
it's unwieldy. It's too much for the coach.
Yeah, we pick coaches that are either currently working as a health official or health director, or have only been retired for a couple of years. So they're very busy people. So you have to keep it very limited.
The members of job training, so they are not, the student is on job training, right? They are job on job and then they participate in training course.
Our fellows, we call them fellows, so the health directors, they come to workshops to get training. But then they use their task list that Savannah was talking about earlier. Is we hope they're selecting things that they need to be doing as part of their job as the public health official. So it might be strategic planning. It might be things with workforce training within their health department. Anything that they've identified as things that they need to be addressing in their health department as part of their task list. So we're just trying to give them the mentoring and the sort of the theoretical structure to help do them, to help do those tasks better, so that they're not doing these extra things outside of what they were supposed to be doing anyway.
So the coach is outside professor or senior officials?
They are other local health directors in other jurisdictions that have been on the job for a number of years. So they've had their nature leaders, most of them were identified through NATO's board or different committees that they have worked on that we've known for years and have asked them if they would like to be coaches because we know that they're so strong in the public health field. And we invited them to submit an application and selected from there.
No, they put together a great
program. If they couldn't go on.
Between different countries and their local businesses.
Excellent.
Thank you. I hope so too.
But see, what a great setup for our program.
Yeah.
I know. I was
like, leadership and strategic planning.
I know. Because I wanted to tell him, like, well, we have a strategic planning program too.
To improve your workforce and coordinate between local and national.
A long time to talk about everything. background, they don't know her.
Nah, I'm just feeling my family. Man, I think there's rules out here.
Yeah, Morales, wow, you guys,
you ain't there 20
Striking this fucking room.
He did it?
Walking around stiff. Let me tell you.
Oh.